Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each week we chat to different guests about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably.
Morning. Yes, that's a good way to start a podcast. Hello, morning. Welcome to episode 17 of Conversations Against Living Miserably. But you probably guessed that already because you clicked on this to listen to it. So well done, you. Today is off to a good start. This week's guest is David Momoney. David is an actor who has starred in Dave's sitcom Sliced, Channel 4's Dead Pixels and Statelet's Flats. And he's recently had a role in the new Fast and Furious spin-off Hobbs and Shaw, which, well, from my personal opinion, would be the crowning achievement of any actor's CV to work along Dwayne Johnson. David is also the founder of Open Door, a charity that gives young people from low socioeconomic backgrounds the opportunity to attend some of England's top drama schools. And we talk a bit about that in today's podcast. But we also talk about confidence, the challenges young people face today, and there's a bit of museum chat that kind of goes throughout the entire episode, which is very strange. But, what do you expect from this podcast at this point? What else do I need to say? Usual admin, if you could rate, review, like, subscribe, all that jazz. Because it just makes us go up in the iTunes chart, and the further we get up, the more people listen, the more money we make for Calm, and we can all sleep easy at night. That's what we can do in this world that's perpetually on fire. We can have a nice night's sleep if it's not too hot, because recently it has been very hot and I haven't slept at all. Anyway, here is Lauren and myself talking to David Momoney. David Momoney, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
So we'll start with the question we always start with. When was the last time you felt calm?
I felt calm a few weeks ago when I had some time off and I was I didn't have any like deadlines or anything hanging over me, and I like purposely took time out, which I'm trying to do more these days because I run a charity as well. which maybe we could talk about later.
Oh, yes.
But it just means that that it's just, you can just constantly be working because there's just always stuff to do. And I think before that, I went to Cape Verde.
Oh, no.
That was nice. And there's nothing there. Like, the tourists have just found it. Like, TUI have found it. And they have taken it over. But we were on a non-TUI hotel just slightly out. It was called, like, the Buddha Retreat or something. It was lovely. It was really nice and really calming. There you go.
Nice. So do you find, now that you are kind of trying to get more of a time to yourself outside of these, like, working areas, what activities or what do you, like, let yourself do on your time off, on your downtime?
I think because there's always stuff to do, that me just sitting on the couch doing nothing is really enjoyable.
Yep, I'm a big advocate for that. I think that's...
And, like, having a social life. Like, I realised the last couple of years, like, 2 years, I haven't really, like, had a social life and, like, catching up with friends. And these are really basic things that everybody, like, this is really basic, David. But, like, for me, they don't happen... I sound like a martyr, don't I? Like, they don't happen that often. So, like... I had, like, a Sunday off, and I was like, right, I'm just going to text, like, a bunch of people and be like, is anyone, let me be a good friend again.
Uh-huh. I'm back.
Yeah, it's just, that for me, it's just those really, like, simple things that I don't always get to do that I think I used to obviously just take for granted.
But those are the things that you instantly, the moment you get busy, they go away because they seem, like, so simplistic and mm-hmm. so kind of,
yeah,
they're everyday that you instantly forget them. I'm such a big advocate for the sitting on the sofa doing fuck all thing.
Yeah.
Because when people talk about self-care and all these different things, like, you need to go do yoga, you know, you need to go for a massage. Like, when was the last time you sat on the sofa, chucked a box set on and ate crisps and just didn't think at all? And it's so lovely.
Exactly that.
It's like when I get time off, my boyfriend's like, what do you want to do? Where should we go? What do you want? Do you want to go cinema? Do you want to go bowling? Do you want? And I'm like, I would like to sit here in silence, and even if we don't talk, even if you don't breathe, that's absolutely. I just want to do nothing,
yeah.
And I want to relish in doing nothing. And then that little 5 minute window will pass, and they'll be like, I've just wasted 5 minutes of my life. Oh my god, yeah. I'm a disaster.
Yeah.
And he's like, should we go bowling? I'm like, we should have gone bowling all along.
It's just letting your mind buffer, isn't it? That's all it is. Like, when the moment you start doing activity, you're once again putting more stress on your mm-hmm. brain, and you're just not giving your brain that time to catch up on itself.
Yeah, and I think, like, before, I didn't really understand taking time for yourself. I never really understood mm-hmm. that concept. Like, I always wanted to be around people and do stuff and talk. Mm-hmm. Like, when people went on holiday on their own, I was like, what's wrong with you? Like, you're going to be in a bar and be like, or, like, see something amazing. Like, this is great. And I realised that no one's behind you to share that moment with. And now I'm like, no, I'm just going to take time by myself and do something. I went to the British Museum
mm-hmm.
to see an exhibition. Like, that's mad.
Yeah,
like
really
I realised, like, I'm ageing and I'm okay with it.
Uh-huh.
And I got there and they were like, the exhibition sold out. And I was like, well, how do I get in? They were like, you'd have to become a member. So I'm now a member of the British Museum. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's mad, isn't it? Like, that is actually, like...
That's full
self-care.
I'm
32, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not... That's proper... I'm just going around, looking at the... I'm going to say it wrong. It's Assyrian. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So all the ancient, like... Syrian, sort of that, and Iraqi, that kind of ancient stuff. And I think because I'm half Iranian, so like the ancient pair, I've always liked that kind of stuff. And I was like, I'm going to go to this thing. And I had this day off. This was the calm time.
Uh-huh.
This was the calm time I was talking about. I missed the big event.
Yeah.
The actual thing where I went to the British Museum and did that and went round and felt great. Felt freaking old, but like, great.
But how about theatre for you?
Yeah.
That's quite a big part of your life, isn't it?
It is. And I think... Again, with the busyness, it's like actually you find yourself not going to the theatre that much because you take it for granted it's there. But yeah, like, yeah, definitely. Like, I think it's that I've not had an issue with and I've mm-hmm. always been quite inspired by. And I probably cry, like, if I moved and cry, like, I'll probably cry more at a piece of theatre than I would TV mm-hmm. or film sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah, like, that's oftentimes when I'm, like, really moved, because I guess what theatre does that television or film doesn't do is that they can change a room and everyone can feel that mm-hmm. thing in the room. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm probably more moved at the theatre.
Because it's a lovely segue into the fact that you are the founder of Open Door.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing non-profit that helps young people get into drama school and experience kind of theatre.
Yeah,
for people that maybe didn't have the means to do that. Do you mind just going into how this came about, if that's right?
So just me as an actor, like, whatever sort of level I'm working at, sort of living off it now, sort of thing, like, most people didn't. My friends, who are beautiful and lovely, like, didn't look and sound like me.
Mm-hmm.
But also working with young people since I was about 17, from National Youth Theatre to schools to young offenders to, like, the whole range, and young people just not seeing that this was possible. It was all mystified and didn't know the sort of pathways, I guess. And also seeing that sort of drama school in the media had been sort of damned quite a bit. And there's absolutely stuff that we can talk about later that, you know, has changed and is changing and all that kind of stuff. But also, I felt that they were coming, that was a lot of time coming from people who hadn't stepped in one of them, actually had no experience about them, but had this idea of them. Or people that were sort of making money and exploiting young people. I saw a lot of sort of projects that were people were a bit like a pyramid scheme, really. Like, they're paying money for a certain amount of time, this like promise that they're going to get with an agency and do well. And I just kept people paying hundreds of pounds. So I had an idea a few years ago, and I was like, I need to sort of do something. And you know, as we know, Twitter can be a very stressful place sometimes, and you saw these people talking about it, but not much getting done.
Yeah.
And I was like, what can I practically do? I know I was working at the youth theatre, and I was sitting on a panel for their auditions, and two girls that were helping out, they said, oh, will you look at my speeches? And I said, yeah. And they told me their story, how their father passed away and their mother wasn't really coping. So financially, they had to sort of keep the family going. I said, look, why don't I help you over that period of time? And they've recently just graduated from RADA and Guildhall.
Oh, sure.
And one play at the Bridge at the moment. And then they've just got this massive job that I can't say. It's twins, but like essentially like life-changing job. Mm. So there's an example of like actually... And so I was like, how can I do that on a bigger scale? So 2017, I launched it, and 30 young people based in London got free auditions at RADA, Lambda, Guildhall, Drama Centre, Royal Welsh Central. And this year we added Royal Scottish. And they get one-on-one tutoring from people like myself or Roy Alexander, who directed Nine Night in the West End. People from a similar background who... just because you're a director and actor doesn't really mean you know how to teach acting or teach acting to young people, or have that sort of pastoral ability in terms of people have confidence, there's a rise of sort of mental health stuff. So someone who has an ability to sort of like make someone feel okay and confident in a room. And we pay for their travel if they sort of have to leave their region. There are a series of workshops. They go to the theatre for free. They go to Donmar for free, Royal Court. And where that work happens is in those buildings. So they get used to being in those buildings. And they get a buddy, a mentor each, somebody who's in the industry.
Oh, I'd sign up just for that. Yeah. Sold.
And I was like, if I'm lucky, I'll get one or two in. And then what we end up with is over 200 recalls, 86 final rounds and 35 offers. So places like Guildhall, which has been quite, I'd say they'd admit before, quite traditionally middle class in terms of the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. Nine of them got an offer. So a third of the year made up just from our scheme. So this year we've expanded to the East Mids, because when you talk about outside London, you're talking about it's just even hard in terms of barriers of trains. You both sound like you're not born in London, so you sort of understand that barrier being so massive. And our patrons like Amelia Clark, who's a mate, I trained with her, and Woody Harrison, because I did a film with him, and I was like, people are like, why is he anything to do at British drama schools? But I just messaged him and he said yes.
Yeah, amazing.
And Riz Ahmed got involved. So, yeah, I think it is kind of making a difference. But I didn't set up to make a difference in terms of like diversifying the industry, but actually in terms of there's all these young people that I keep seeing that are not getting help and not making it through. So
the more you talk about it, the more I'm like, I've seen this shared on Twitter, because I did drama, but again, it I didn't think 10 years ago that it was a route for me to go to drama school, because living in Newcastle, I was like, the thought of even getting on a train to London to go to an audition as an anxious teenager, I was like, no, like, London's so big and I'm not going there, no way. And I think now it's better schools do come to the northeast and stuff. They make the travel. But at the time, I was like, no, I physically can't get on the train to go there, even if I could afford it. And I was like, just the thought of being on my own in this big, scary city, going to drama schools. And I was like, I'll go to university, please. I'll do that one instead. And I wish I'd had the confidence 10 years ago to be like, fuck it, I'm going to go and I'm going to make it happen. Because if I had the mentality I've got now 10 years ago, I'd be Olivia Colman. I swear. I'd be, I would have just been so driven and gone for it. But I think kids are so, I don't want to say fragile, but they're not ready yet. They need someone to push them. That's what they need.
I think that's essentially a lot of the work. Yes, you can give, if we just go free auditions and the travel, like maybe they do okay, but we're also given in terms of, you're sort of dealing with like a cultural history sometimes in terms of like exposure to stuff, getting able to afford the theatre, and just sort of working with like sort of high level professionals, which you might get at some of those private schools who have like professional directors as part of their school. But also the thing that you said, the major thing is about confidence and you feeling like, I'm okay to travel down to London and I feel confident that, or I am good enough to do it. People like me can be in those rooms, because when you talk about the Northeast, like how many actors are from the Northeast, like in terms of the region, like how many, like if you just think about the Midlands. Like, how many actors are actually disproportionately in things? It's like, it's wild how the disproportionality. And the North East is definitely an area where we're like, we need to get there, because it's just slightly neglected in terms of drama school and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the confidence is the massive thing, and that's most of the work. And hopefully, like, if they don't get into drama school, they're you know, really upset. Of course they are. Mm-hmm. And they're seeing their peers getting in and stuff like that. But actually, they're going, do you know what? But I've still learned some stuff. I feel better about myself. I feel confident. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give it another crack. And I think that's the major part. There's a lot of pastoral care that goes into it in terms of making people feel okay. And I think not doing it on your own as well. Like,
yeah.
The fact that you're there, I've asked mum for a load of travel, I'm going there, I'm doing it myself, I get rejected by myself, I don't know what rooms I'm going into. Whereas there's a group, there's a sharing of them, and there's like, oh, we're all just sort of doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
That.
If I was in a restaurant, I couldn't go to the toilet by myself. Like, if I was in a restaurant I'd not been in before, if I didn't know where the toilets were, I would have to wait till my mum went to the toilet to follow her. So the thought of then go into another city. No, thank you. Mm. No. It's very evident I had anxiety from a lot earlier than what I thought.
I'm really enjoying how every episode you just kind of keep having an existential crisis about yourself.
Maybe that was a sign.
Things every episode.
Because I think it's a big part of, especially when you're in the art, is learning to deal with rejection.
Yeah.
And I think that, like what you were saying, having somebody else to share that, even having that confidence built up to be able to deal with rejection is such a skill. Not, it's even if they don't get in and try again and again and again, but even if they don't want to try again, that's a skill to take just in life. Because I think if I'd learned to deal with rejection a bit sooner, like now, I get doors shut in my face left, right and centre, and I'm like, bring it at me, I don't care. But God, I think to teach younger people that would be amazing. Mm. Incredible, yeah.
I think what we tell them in terms of that is going, like, you're not there to... It's like if an actor or a comedian, whatever it is, like, you're not there to get the job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the ideal, but you're there just to do your job, and your job there is to do the acting bit. I mean, when I first, like... I won't mention the name of the agency, but the first meeting I had, I did this Roy Williams piece, which is quite very London, and I went into the room, and they're like, oh, you actually speak like that. Yeah, you're going to have to change that. I mean, that's what you're dealing with like 10 years ago. I mean, it's changed, obviously. Yeah. It's changed quite a bit. But so always in those rooms, I always felt like people who were directors, casting directors, whatever they were better than me. Mm-hmm. They knew more. And as a performer or an artist, or it depends on your job, it's like you are always at the bottom. You're constantly dealing with rejection. And as soon as I sort of made a switch and realised, like, I'm not being present in the room, I'm trying to get the job, I'm trying to impress. And actually all my job is to do is, like, if you gave me this job, this is how I do it. This is how I play the mm-hmm. character. And there's an empowerment in that. And you walk away and you realise, because it's so out of your control, what they think, because they've already cast the brother or sister and you look nothing like them, mm-hmm. or you're too tall, or it's not what the writer had in mind, or they've already cast Olivia Colman, and so there's no way that you pass, you know what I mean, but they've got to see some people in case she doesn't say the role.
Uh-huh.
So it's so out of your control. And then so when you leave the room, you've done your job and you can leave and you're not worried about how well you've done. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, you've done the best you can in that time. If they give you the script the night before, how can you be expected to, like, be off book with 10 pages and nail it?
It's exactly.
You've not given me the tools. And so with the guys of Open Door, we're sort of saying, you've done your monologue work, you've prepared. Even teaching people to prepare properly, like, mm-hmm. we don't, innit? We're like, oh, I can't sort of learn the lines, I'm going to say it out loud. I've prepared. In the interview bit, I'm just going to be me. I don't have to try and be what I think they want me to be, which we can often feel like we're in rooms. And so when they leave those auditions, they're like, I've done my bit, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So whether they get a recall or not, there's a confidence in that.
Yeah.
I think... I wish someone taught me that when I was...
rather than a feeling of failure.
Yeah. It's got nothing to... It was out of my control. I did the best I could, and that's all I can do. And I think if we can get young people thinking like that, like you said,
mm-hmm.
I wish someone had told me that a lot longer and I might have been a lot better. And I guess I was just fortunate enough that I got a lot of, like... I just made it through enough no's.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important. I think, you know, the biggest part of the job is self-esteem and responsibility. And I think we can often think, like, well, especially as performers and stuff, like, I'm just waiting for the phone to ring. Like, someone's going to give me something. I mean, maybe, you know, as a comedian, like, obviously, it's a lot of your own work anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of actors sort of need to learn that. It doesn't mean you have to write your own thing and or anything like that. But just taking responsibility of, like, things are a bit crap. Okay, how do I move on from that rather than, like, waiting for this magical thing to happen? And I think if you can instill that in young people from a young age in terms of self-esteem and then responsibility, like, I'm in charge of my path in some way, and things that happen to me that are out of my control, there's nothing I can do about that, then I think we're setting people up for that rejection, that is part of it.
Definitely.
So that was a bit of a long speech, wasn't it?
No, loved it. Absolutely amazing. The arts is a really beautiful place for young people to start kind of getting a bit of direction, and I think it can really help with kind of mental health as well, getting that kind of confidence and like learning new techniques and exploring this new world. Mm. I've found personally that working in the arts is very good for mental health because it instills you with confidence, it gives you self-esteem, it gives you a friendship group and the sense of community.
Clear.
How important have you seen that with the young people that you work with?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what we just talked about obviously is the fact that like all that rejection, all that having to re-interview essentially all the time, reaffirm your ability. And you can go into rooms and some cast director thinks you're the most amazing thing ever. And then some people, and most think you're underwhelming. And like, that's generally the pattern. Mm. But absolutely, like, it can be really empowering. And I think that's what I mean with that responsibility bit. If we can get that in them, that it's kind of, some of it is in their own hands, then they could feel better about it. But absolutely, like, you do. Like, I mean, the perfect sort of open door story is someone who comes in, like, they're not good enough, feeling unconfident. And by the end of it, they're completely confident and they're in. But that confidence has been a massive, massive part of it.
Yeah.
It's massive. That's probably most of the work. Mm-hmm. And I think as performers, you know, like when you're really confident, you probably do your best work because you're not in your head and there's not all those voices in your head. And I obviously do a lot of comedy, but like acting is what, you know, my way in. And whole through drama school was like, get rid of the fourth wall, get rid of the fourth wall, get rid of, just pretend no one's there. I was like, I'm too freaking self-conscious for that. Like,
yeah.
Not going to happen. And as soon as I realised, like, you're there, I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. I know you're there. Okay, now I can be okay with that. If I spend the whole time trying to pretend something's not that it is, then I can't deal with it. Mm. So sort of also going like, okay, you're feeling these things. I'm going to accept that. That's how I feel. I'm not going to spend my whole time not trying to feel nervous. Yeah. I feel nervous and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had something similar. So I find eye contact so difficult. So difficult. It sometimes I'll be aware that I'm making eye contact and my brain will be like, you're doing it, you're making eye contact. And then I'll be like, shit, you're making eye contact. I don't know why. I just find it very difficult. Mm. But as a stand-up, you're in front of a crowd. You've got to... So for my first few years, I did a public speaking thing once and they said to do a Z with your eyes. So you're bringing everybody in, but you're never actually looking long enough at one person. So I used to always do that, and I found it brilliant. And I got slagged off. Well, not slagged off. I'm kind of slagged off by so many, like, sort of promoters or just other comics being like, you never look at anybody. You never make eye contact. So then I was forcing myself to, like, stare at the front row and look. And it affected my performance in a bad way because I was like, I'm not comfortable on stage. And then once I started to talk about mental health on stage, I felt a bit more comfortable with it. So now I've started saying, as soon as I mentioned having anxiety, I'm like, so I find it really difficult to make eye contact. If you're sat in the front row, you'll notice I've not fucking looked at you. And then they laugh because they're like, oh, yeah, we had noticed that you haven't looked. And oh, it's been like a... Like, I've turned a corner because I'm like, there was me forcing myself to do something I didn't feel comfortable with. But instead, I've just gone, hey, I find it quite difficult to look you in the eye, so I probably won't look you in the eye. Is that okay? Yep, cool, brilliant. So much. It's like finding ways to make what works for you work in your job, kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, like, completely honestly.
It does.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So as kind of founder of this organisation, which does help a lot of people, do you find that you are able to look after yourself at a equal amount that you are looking after other people, or is that something that usually takes responsibility into your detriment?
Yeah, like, I think this year I've been really better at raising enough money to have someone full time. Obviously takes some off, but I've done stuff like, okay, I'm taking Sunday off, because anxiety and all those things, like, my brain was just so rapid. I just speak nonsense. I wouldn't be present. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just constantly like, okay, and I couldn't focus. Like, I'm like, I'm here, I'm maybe talking to you, but I'm thinking about all these things I have to do. And I was like, if I carry on at this pace, I'm going to burn out. And friendship suffered, family stuff suffered, not just like arguments, but like I said, I didn't spend time with people because I wasn't looking after myself at all. It's 11 o'clock and I've got 3 hours, like, I've got to learn some lines because there's an audition tomorrow that I haven't prepared enough because I've put Open Door first, which was a lot of the stuff. Like, yeah, I think it's fine to say. I'm back on it, guys. But like, before, like, I'd be like, you know, because sometimes scripts come in the day before and it's like loads of pages and it's only a 200-page script. And like, it's not ideal, but it usually makes you, what you do before is like, all right, I'll drop the afternoon and that's what I'll do. But I can't because I've got to meet you because you're going to be a partner of some sorts and I'm tutoring you and I can't let that young person down. And this meeting's been the dive for ages and you're very busy. You're an artistic director of a theatre or you work at a channel or whatever it is. And so, therefore, I'd go in prepared, and that would give me anxiety because they think I'm crap. They think I'm shit because I'm doing a shit job and I'm better than this. And it was, I was going to burn out. I knew, and I feel like I'm sort of getting it back. And like, I've always been like, if there's an issue, right, how do I solve it? How do I be like that? And I started getting this like slight anxiety panic, which I guess I dealt with or didn't know it was there for a while, or like it was fine. And then I realised, like, this is too much now. And because I couldn't identify what it was, if that makes sense, like, I didn't know why I was feeling those things. I wasn't like, because this happened or I've just broken up. You know, a lot of my friends might be like, I'm seeing someone, I've just gone through this breakup or someone passed away. Whereas mine was like, I just have this, like, I wake up and I've got this, like, panic here and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Nothing's wrong. And I think doing that like, full-on year of Open Door where I was up till 2, I'll continue that story, it was 11 o'clock and I was like, how do I get through the night? I'll go to shop and get Haagen-Dazs. I was nearly like 3-4 Haagen-Dazs a week.
Yes.
Going to work, like, that's my, I'm treating myself for working so hard. And it's so odd because I'll give this advice to like the young people, all this stuff I'm saying, to look after yourself, take some time to yourself, let's schedule, let's do all this stuff. And I wasn't taking it on myself. And even the stuff I'm, you know, realistically, like, I think a lot of actors, a lot of performers can relate to this, and sort of like, I'm giving all that advice to young people about, like, don't worry about in the room, don't worry about pressing. I'm doing it myself, do you know what I mean? Sometimes I'm like, oh, they think I'm crap. Like, it's a constant battle. But yeah, I'm trying to be better at it. And, you know, in terms of like young people in general, I say is that, okay, you're feeling these things, maybe go talk to your GP or here's all this stuff. And the issue is when you're dealing with people who are from low income backgrounds, they can't afford a £60, £100 therapist, £40 therapist. It's like, we're like, what do we do? Do you know what I mean? Like, do we have to try and get someone on side? But where are barriers in terms of responsibility? Like, actually, are we just an arts organisation? Should we be going that far in terms of not crossing boundaries? But absolutely, like, referring people to GPs, at least doing that first. I know that's more cognitive stuff, which could be sort of short-term helpful. Yep. But myself going, I did a couple of sessions and then I felt a bit bad because she was charging me for sessions that I wasn't going to, that I wasn't cancelling last minute. And I felt a bit like begrudged by that. But apparently some people say it's normal practice, but it isn't. But absolutely, I've got a number in my phone that I'm ready to text. Although everything's all right at the moment, like, let me just make sure that, because a year ago it was mad. And shouldn't use the word mad because of these very reasons. But I think that I'm trying to be better in terms of, like, taking Sundays off and making sure, like, I don't feel guilty for taking time off.
Yeah. Was there a point that you got to where you realised that you needed to start looking after yourself? Or was it just kind of a gradual thing of...
I haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
So I feel like sometimes I used to be so sensitive. I used to be, like, the most sensitive fellow, and I went to sort of like your typical like story of like inner city London school where like you don't cry, all that same story. And like Jihadi John went to my school. That's the kind of school I went to. That's our
Flame
famous
to
alumni.
Fame.
Yeah. Shola Ammar, Jihadi John, and Talisa from N-Dubs. That's why. That's,
what a
that's,
dinner
yeah,
party.
Yeah. Stories to tell. And it was pretty rough and all that. My home was fine, like, everything was nice there. School was really hectic, and I know I wanted to, when I finished school, I wanted to go to Bristol Old Vic, the street school, because I thought the whole of London was, like, what I saw as, like, kiddlehood. Like, it was violent and ready to go. Like, you know, and people find it mad about, like, people carrying knives, but I definitely thought about carrying a knife because I was so fearful.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably led to, I go, oh, I'm fine now and la, la, la. And actually, like, talking to that therapist at times, like, actually, you've gone through these, like, traumas. And I was like, that's such a big word. Like, I'm not sure about that. I feel like I've gone through some stuff. And actually,
as you're
like,
sharpening your knives, me, yeah. Trauma. Yeah.
What are you talking about? and I guess I cracked on with life. Mm-hmm. And I just always, you know, on and on. And then you realise, actually, maybe that stuff did take a hit somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe that did do something for your confidence if you're constantly bullied or whatever it is.
But that raises an interesting point, actually, because if you felt like that when you were younger, was that a bit of the inspiration behind starting Open Door?
I mean, London, we're very lucky. Like, there's so much stuff. Like, I try to sometimes remind the London lot that actually, like, although, like, times are hard, like, they're not as hard as if, like, you're from a town somewhere, like some of the parts of East Mids, like Derby, like the only arts organisation is the theatre itself. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing in the area. So if you're a young person into the arts, you're just not exposed to that. Because we know, like, arts, there's PE teachers teaching art and drama on a rotation. Like, that's the level, that's what we're dealing with. And people telling me I was like, insane to think that, like, I could be an actor. Like, that was such a massive thing. But, like, I sort of knew no other thing. And I think that self-esteem stuff, I think absolutely, like, my ability to make someone hopefully build their confidence through their acting is my ability to absolutely spot why their acting's not quite working at the moment. It's because they're thinking in a certain way, they're confident. Because I was so neurotic and in my head and completely conscious the whole time that I feel like I completely understand where they're coming from. Whereas, like, you know, performers who have absolutely, like, blind confidence, they're not always the best ones, but they've got absolutely blind confidence, that you're like, I don't know how you're doing that. That is amazing that you can have that confidence. Mm-hmm. And I think because my understanding of that, I guess, and the dip into the two worlds, but also being them, being that anxious young person and understanding it, I guess, without, yeah, I think so, perhaps.
When was the first time you were made aware of mental health, like positive or negative mental health being a thing?
Well, obviously, like, mental health was only seen as, like, crazy. Mm. You are sectioned or you're having a breakdown. Or those are sort of the extremes. Depressed, I think people knew depression. Mm-hmm. I think that was a thing. But that was felt a very extreme thing. Was actually, like, it's only a few years, really, isn't it, that people, here we are doing this podcast, like, it's only a few years that, like, people are identifying it as different.
Yeah, that's not just black and white.
Yeah. So
there's a whole muddle of mess there in the middle.
Yeah, there's a whole muddle of mess. And I think we're at such a weird time where we're still sort of figuring it out.
Completely.
And this might be a bit controversial, but we're also living in a time where, like, labelling everything. Mm-hmm. Like, at one point, I've had two partners say to me, like, I think you might be ADHD. And I'm like, God, what? No. And I'm thinking, like, what if I am? Like, but actually, like, so glad I wasn't. If I am, I don't know if I am, maybe I should get it checked out. But if I was, like, how that would have affected my thing. And I think so many young people are aware of, like, I've got mental health issues. And that's us still understanding what that means and what degree. Mm-hmm. And actually, like, okay, how much of it is actually confidence wise, like, oh, we're still in our 20s and we're figuring out, like, when we get in our 30s. I don't know the point I'm making, but I guess what I'm trying to say is it's still this grey area. Like, absolutely, we're still going, this is mental health issue. Absolutely. But it's still this grey area of, like, hang on, what does this still mean? Because it's so, so new. But I think we are really identifying things that we've always felt, that anxious that I had, that yourself had, and we are identifying them. And like I said, that, oh, trauma, what are you talking about? Like, I'm all right. But actually, maybe I'm not all right. Like, actually, maybe I'm not all right. And the fact that, like, the government, the NHS, us haven't caught up, that, like, there isn't anywhere we can go unless we've got private care.
Yeah, honestly.
And social media is massive problem. I feel it, like, even on the left side, obviously, like, I've gone all over the place, haven't I? But even on the left side, where, like, we're talking about right on this, diversity, la, 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 that can be so stressful because you can constantly feel that things are so, so bad. And everything's so polarised. I think that we weren't really that political. Some people were, like, but essentially weren't that political. And when Brexit happened, suddenly everyone was really politicised, which is a beautiful, brilliant thing. Mm. And so much so, like, there was that tweet that went out, was like, oh, poor Taylor Swift and Tom Hiddleston, like, no one gives a damn because they've gone for this big PR campaign and no one actually cares. And I think that sort of leaked into the arts world a bit. And this sort of polarisation of everything.
Yeah, indeed.
Like, black, white, I'm right, you're wrong, and a sort of self-righteousness into it, without grey, without conversation. So much so that we're absolutely, like, taking people down, ruining careers on things. Yeah. Now, some stuff, if someone is overtly racist, if someone is sex, all those things, absolutely, absolutely. But sometimes they're without context, sometimes we're reading the clickbait, the lines. quotes that someone's taken out of complete context. And I think that can just be a constant stress and a pressure for young people to feel like I have to be involved or this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. Because of this reason, I don't do too much on Twitter in terms of that stuff. But I wrote this one where I wrote this thing. I was like, we have to be responsible with our voices. And it's not about shutting up, but we have to be responsible because it is having an effect on us. And it's having an effect on young people in terms mm-hmm. of like, we have to balance it with all the positive stuff that's going on, all the brilliant things that are going, be it this podcast, be it mm-hmm. this has changed already, this is happening in the Northeast, this is keeping the Northeast into it, but this is happening. But like, there is so much amazing stuff going on. Yeah. But if you just looked on Twitter, even on the left side, you'd be like, the world is awful. And it's stressful. I remember Cape Verde having my holiday mm-hmm. and I'd like, right, I'm not going to do it. And as soon as I looked at it, just the constant stress, yeah. like, this is shit, we need to change this, which is all absolutely right. But the effect it's having off is mad. And I think that absolutely the rise in young people with mental health issues, and that does play a massive part in it.
Especially when it comes to self-confidence as well, yeah. because as a society, it's only been 10 years since we've been able to have all of human information in a rectangle in our pocket. And our brains haven't evolved in those 10 years to be able to accept that amount yeah. of information. Yeah. That's just a scientific fact.
Yeah.
So the fact that young people are now getting access to more information than any other human in the entirety of the human race, their brains just haven't caught up with how to process mm. all of these different images, be it bad, positive, and these images of what they are supposed to be doing, what they're supposed to be thinking. And then, of course, it just becomes more politicised and angry as it gets going. And it's so difficult. I have spoken to like quite a few young people that say they do practice self-care quite a lot on social media now, which is something that like hasn't really been taught or anything like that. Because there's that great argument of kids should be, parents should be telling their kids what to do on social media. It's like, but the parents never grew up with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And like, I was part of the generation where we had like MSN Messenger and stuff. It just yeah. kind of happened around us. But we never got taught how to use it. And then with younger generation, it's like,
I have fully grown up
Pandora's
with the internet,
box.
Yeah.
Our last question is, do you have any advice to your younger self regarding your mental health or how you live your life without misery?
Yeah, it's all the basic stuff, like, you're okay, mate. Like, you're okay. Like, everything's okay.
Get a British Museum membership sooner.
British Museum.
Yeah.
maybe talking to people more, but I don't know if that would have done anything. Like, I think as a young man, you have to pretend everything's okay all the time. I mean, yeah, it's just the obvious one of, like, you're okay, mate, like, things take time and to take the pressure off yourself and all the stuff, I guess, we're teaching on the open door lot.
Yeah.
Which is probably why, like you said, actually, it's probably why I do it. It's like, actually, I wish someone had mm-hmm. done that with me or people did do that with me, and how can I pass that on?
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if I have anything that interesting.
No, that's
a great answer. Lovely answer. Beautiful. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
No, our pleasure entirely.
We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better.
And that's episode 17. Done. Crushed it. Done. Oh, yeah, okay. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you so much for David for coming in and letting us bother him for a little bit. And if you wanted to find out more about Open Door and if you could kind of get involved and help out, Just Google it. Just Google it. I didn't write down the website address in my notes for this outro, so you just Google it. That's the most information I can give you at this point. Thank you to Lauren, obviously. Do you know what? Thank you to me. Never do that. Never thank myself. I don't do that much. And thank you to Dave, and thank you to Calm for letting us make this strange little podcast. I should do this every week, really, but I always forget. But if you've got a few extra quid just lying around and you feel like just donating a bit of extra money to Calm, you can just go to, I think it's dave.uktv. Is it? Yeah, dave.uktv.co.uk/calm. Or something. Just Google Dave and Calm. Or just Google Calm, actually. Just go straight in. But if you could donate some money, that'd be grand. They're an amazing charity. They do some incredible work. And all the money that we could possibly raise for them will be used in an excellent way. Anyway, that's probably enough of me speaking. If you could, like, subscribe, rate, review, tell people about the podcast, all that jazz, but I won't go into that too much in this outro because I say it every bloody week, and at this point you must be sick of it. That's it. That's it. That's all the admin. That's all I've got. Come back next week if you want to. It'd be nice if you did. Bye, 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 bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.